Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Our guest for this full hour, very gracious in giving us so much of his time, is Dinesh D'Souza, much in demand at the moment, as America, I think, is clamoring to learn more about his new film, which we are profiling here today, Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. And Dinesh, I just wanted to hone in on this point. There has really been a bait and switch on these, folks who have largely been condemned to life on the urban plantation. The opportunities to get out, notwithstanding the endless promises of more jobs and guaranteed right to progress, has been pretty appalling and condemning most of these folks to a perpetual sort of confinement in this plantation. Talk a bit of that if you would.
The Democrats make sure that many of the people on the urban plantation aren't really capable of doing any jobs. Remember that under slavery, the Democrats were mainly stealing these people's labor. That's what they were doing. Now they don't want to steal their labor. They want their votes. That's what they want. And so in order to do that, they've got to keep a perpetual dependency. The urban pastor, Eugene Rivers, a black guy from the Boston area, made an astounding statement a few years ago. He said, when I look at these inner city blacks, these black males, he goes, they don't even have the skills to be useful slaves. Now, this was a startling statement, but what he meant was that if you are a slave, you're a mason or a weaver or you're an agricultural worker, and when slavery ends, you have skills that are actually marketable. The people who are actually useless are the masters who don't know how to do anything, but the slaves do. And his point is, when I look at the inner city now, you have people, and the people say, well, they need jobs. But, you know, can you imagine these guys showing up for work, even at McDonald's, punching a clock, respecting authority, taking orders, being cordial to customers? They don't even know how to do that. So the Democrats have created this completely, if you will, dependent, subservient class, because their only interest in these people, again, is their votes.
For which they typically get paid or some other form of compensation to provide the votes. And that feeds this racket, doesn't it, Dinesh? This is kind of the game that is sort of endlessly ongoing with the public trough being the purveyor of the payment.
And now it's extending to immigrants. You know, the whole immigration debate to me is miscast. I mean, I'm an immigrant. I think America can and should have a generous immigration policy. The real question is, what kind of immigrants do we want? Do we want immigrants who want to assimilate to the American dream, who want to be productive members of society? That's the immigrants we want. That's the immigrants the Democrats do not want. They want immigrants who will sort of join the ghettos, the barrios, the slums, immigrants who essentially become a serfs of the Democratic Party, so that they can, in a sense, corral them into new types of plantations, extending their social control.
And, you know, this may sound like hyperbole, but I think this is, again, something that can be, and you have done a lot to document. And, you know, going back to I believe it was 1965 Immigration Reform Act, and sort of turning on its head this whole idea that what we want are people who want to add real value to the country and be part of it, as you say. We've got instead now masses of people who don't.
And the Democrats always try to erase the line between legal and illegal immigration. And this is part of their big campaign against Trump, is that they're saying, you know, he's against immigration. Well, there's an important distinction between people who go through the system, stand in line, are properly vetted, and people who essentially swim the Rio Grande. So that's a totally different deal. And many of us who are legal immigrants who have got taken the trouble to go through the system and respect the fact that we're a nation under law, don't like the notion of people jumping the fence.
Of particular concern to me, I must say, is the idea that in addition to trying to import large numbers of people who are unlikely to assimilate, shall we say, there now seems to be a special effort being made, particularly by Barack Obama, to import people who we know will not assimilate, who couldn't be more clear about their refusal to assimilate, namely adherence to Sharia. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Well, we see from the European example that within liberal societies, and I'm using the phrase liberal here in the small L sense of the term, the people who are the most indigestible are the Muslims. I mean, can a Pakistani, you know, become an Englishman? Can a Turk become a German? Can a Kuwaiti become a Frenchman? The Europeans are discovering that this is a very difficult, I won't say impossible, it's certainly a very difficult process. So it doesn't seem to be a process that we should be inviting in this country. Now, again, I'm not saying for 1 minute that Muslims can't come to America or that they can't become U.S. citizens. No. But what I am saying is that this notion of sort of almost recklessly and defiantly promoting Islamic immigration to America seems to me to make no sense. What does America gain from this? Why are we pursuing this project? So it looks to me that with the Democrats and Obama, it's almost like an ideological retribution against the Republicans. Obama's an ideological guy. This is the important thing to realize. The distinction between Obama and Hillary is at the end of the day, Obama is an ideologue. His ideology, I think, is pathetic, it's twisted, it's destructive, but there it is. He believes it. He actually thinks that this is the way to go. With Hillary and Bill, you're dealing more with Bonnie and Clyde. These are people who have been on the make and on the take since the Arkansas days, going through the White House where they were, you know, renting out the Lincoln bedroom, taking curios off the desks and pictures off the wall, later being forced to return some of them, selling pardons to big-time racketeers, tax cheats, and felons and criminals. The Clintons, in this sense, are a different breed than Obama, and I think should be understood differently. Hillary's America will look a little different than Obama's America.
And yet, you make a very powerful case, I think, in the film, Dinesh, that Hillary is imbued with some of the same ideological DNA as Obama, notably your profile of her relationship with Saul Alinsky. Would you talk a little bit about that, please?
Yes, Alinsky is the bridge between Obama and Hillary. Interestingly, Hillary's relationship with Alinsky is far stronger than Obama's. Alinsky died in 1972. Obama never knew him, never met him. Obama studied under the Alinskyites. Hillary, however, knew Alinsky, met him in high school, brought him to Wellesley College when she was a student there, wrote her thesis on him. Now, interestingly, you know, when Bill Clinton got up and gave his big Rapunzel fairy tale story of Hillary at the Democratic National Convention, conveniently omitted any mention of Alinsky at all, even though Alinsky was so instrumental in the transition that Hillary made from being a Goldwater girl to being a left-wing ideologue. Now, the side of Alinsky, I want to stress, that I discuss in the movie, but even at more length in the book, Hillary's America, is the notion of Alinsky not just as a radical ideologue, but as a kind of a thief and a gangster. This side of Alinsky is not well known at all, even though Alinsky himself talks about it. In interviews he gave very late in life, Alinsky said, "I was a petty thief on the streets of Chicago. Later, when I went to the University of Chicago, I developed a sort of a robbery scheme to eat free in cafeterias, and he even conducted seminars on how to steal from the university while he was a student there." Then later on, he goes on and gets involved in all these gangs, culminating in the Al Capone gang.
Yeah,
where
he did an internship with Al Capone, right?
Yeah, he becomes friends with Al Capone's enforcer, the number two guy, Frank Nitti. And he actually talks openly about how he admired the way that the Capone mob used to extort money from people. The only downside being that mobsters sometimes got knocked off. And then Alinsky goes, "I figured out that if I could do this in politics, if I could apply these same lessons to politics, essentially he could be an extortionist without getting knocked off." So it's actually remarkable to contemplate that current President Obama and our aspiring next president, Hillary, are tutored at the feet of this self-acknowledged gangster.
We're going to pause at that point and come back to our final segment with Dinesh D'Souza, in which we'll talk about what Hillary taught Saul Alinsky about the great crime against America right after this.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.